This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckaberry. Thanks for listening. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in another round of the Trump White House versus the judiciary upheld a temporary restraining order preventing President Trump's seven-country travel ban from being enforced, which means refugees, visa holders, and other travelers from the seven majority Muslim countries who have their legal documents in order can keep entering the United States at this time. But for how long? See you in court. The security of our nation is at stake, said President Trump on Twitter. But here is what Bob Ferguson, Washington State's attorney general, said.
In response to the president's tweet, well, we have seen him in court twice, and we're two for two. That's number one.
Attorney General Ferguson brought this suit along with the state of Minnesota. We go back now to Leon Fresco, former deputy attorney, assistant attorney general at the Justice Department, where he was head of the Office of Immigration Litigation under the Obama administration, to help us understand where we stand. Leon Fresco, welcome back.
Thank you, John.
Now, does the court say that there's something wrong with the president's paperwork here on this executive order, that he doesn't have the authority to do this, or that the security of the government is not at stake in this executive order? What's going on here?
Well, there are multiple layers of what the court said was wrong with the executive order. The first was there was a claim made by the government that the executive order had been rescinded insofar as it applied against lawful permanent residents. And the court ruled that no, it had not been rescinded, because what happened was the White House counsel had attempted to make a clarification to the executive order. And the court said that the White House counsel is unable to do that because the White House counsel is not in the chain of command of the agencies that would have to implement this order, which are the Homeland Security Department and the State Department. And so only the president himself could actually rescind his own guidance, or at least the Secretary of Homeland Security or the Secretary of State could do it, but the White House counsel could not do it. So that was the paperwork issue. And in terms of where the analysis from the courts came, when they made the analysis of the private harms versus the public harms, the court made an analysis that the private harms, which was all of the things we were seeing at the airports with people being detained and the uncertainty regarding green card holders and visa holders, outweighed the public harms because there was not enough evidence in this record that the seven countries at issue had supplied any terrorist attacks in the recent history of the United States. And so there was not a justification for this immediate, complete ban of travel, as opposed to an individualized analysis where someone could make their case why they should be allowed to travel.
All right, so 2 points there. Number one, this is the first time that the federal judiciary has actually critiqued this style of President Trump using these executive orders to make all kinds of judgments. It just so happens that in the paperwork issue, as you describe and as I described, there's a sort of a mess up here that Trump doesn't seem to understand how things get done. And that's partly what the court was criticizing or ruling on, correct?
Yes, that's correct. The court said that if the president is going to issue an executive order, then either the president or someone in the actual chain of command of the agents who have to implement this order have to rescind the order. It cannot be the White House counsel, because the White House counsel is not in the chain of command. And so the president would have had to change the order himself, which it seems from all accounts he was not inclined to do.
All right. So that potentially has wide implications to a lot of stuff that's been going on since the inauguration. All right, let's put that aside. Now, on this question of the trade-off of harm to individuals who are stuck at airports, stuck at humanitarian agency offices, stuck in refugee camps, perhaps, with their paperwork in order, who might be affected by this ban, that is more of a harm than what the Trump administration demonstrated in court or offered in court as evidence of a security concern in the United States. Did the Trump administration just have bad evidence? Did they say they didn't have to apply any evidence? Did they supply evidence and the court said that's ridiculous? What was going on there?
Well, there was no evidence in the district court record of a particularized set of findings that the administration looked at in order to make these seven countries subject to the travel ban. They simply were relying upon the fact that Congress had passed a statute that did not allow people from those seven countries to enter on the visa waiver program in order to now designate them for a complete travel ban. But what the court was taking exception to was the fact that there was not specific evidence in the record that led for that judgment to be made for a complete travel ban. And so when they asked the attorney for the government during the oral argument what evidence there was, the attorney said that the case was moving too quickly for evidence to be placed into the record. And so that was something that the court did not take too lightly.
So the Trump administration is kind of asserting a sort of executive privilege here by saying, oh, we don't have to do that, folks. Leave us alone. This is national security. And the court said, whoa, get out of town.
Well, yeah, I mean, I always try to keep my language as formal as possible, but that is another way to describe what happened. Certainly.
But it certainly explains the unanimity here in the three-judge circuit, right?
Yes. I mean, that I think is the most remarkable part of the decision, which is if you listen to the argument in the case, you thought there might be a chance for either a narrowing of the executive order or perhaps a 2-1 decision. But I think at the end of the day, what carried the decision to make it a 3-0 unanimous decision was this concept that the ban itself was not justified by any immediate exigencies that would have required this complete, basically, elimination of due process where an individual could not make their case as to why it was significant that they could travel to the United States. What, you know, if somebody had a medical procedure that needed happen the next day or something. And so that was the problem.
Well, my mind is racing here. There's so much to cover. All right, let me get at the issue of, is there a specific legal test that administrations or anyone has to meet on questions like this, like clear and present danger, that sort of thing, when you're trying to say, hey, there's a national security issue at stake?
Well, so this is what the Supreme Court is going to analyze, because the Ninth Circuit has been, to be fair to the Trump administration, the Ninth Circuit has been a little bit of an outlier here, where the Ninth Circuit has been trying to be the leader of a movement to say all immigration orders are reviewable. It doesn't matter what kind of order it is. That is not exactly where the immigration law is today. There is some precedent, and it definitely is Supreme Court precedent that goes back over 100 years, that there are some issues that are simply unreviewable because the way the framers set up the system when the Congress and the president executed a statute like the one that's at issue here, that makes it a political issue that is no longer subject to the judicial review. And so the Ninth Circuit has been pushing back very heavily on that and saying, well, no, that's not true. Everything must have some level of review. And so the first thing that the Supreme Court's going to have to decide is there a level of review? And then if there's a level of review, what deference is given to the government in these decisions? And so what the Ninth Circuit said is there is significant deference given to the government, but even with that significant deference, there was nothing in this record to defer to. So that's why there's not a likelihood of success on the government's part.
All right, guys. So this issue helps me to understand why on right-wing radio or talk radio, there have been screaming hosts saying that this insane Ninth Circuit is offering due process 14th Amendment protections to people who aren't even Americans, and that's crazy. What you're saying is a civilized and decorous way of explaining what the issue is that the Supreme Court's going to have to decide.
Correct. This has been a tension that's been boiling in the courts for about 20 years, and the Supreme Court has been very, very reluctant to once and for all offer guidance as to the different levels of due process that different individuals who are in different stages of the immigration process have in the United States. What is the level of due process someone outside of the United States has? What is the level that someone who just crossed the border and was apprehended has? What is the level that someone who's been here 20 years but illegally has? And all of those are debates that the Supreme Court has been very reluctant to weigh in. And so this may be the case where the Supreme Court actually has to start setting some principles about who has due process rights, under what circumstances, and what are the nature of those rights.
All right, finally and quickly, or as quickly as you can, what does the 4-4 court mean in trying to decide that argument? And can you tell us anything important about the three members of the Ninth Circuit panel?
Well, so if you remember what I was telling you Monday, I had predicted that this would happen, that they were, that this order would, that the stay would continue, because this particular panel, just in my time litigating with the Ninth Circuit, I had not seen any sort of significant reason to think that this panel, that these specific panel members would have some affinity toward the government's argument in this case. Now, going up to the Supreme Court, it's going to be complicated because, again, as I explained to you earlier in the week, we had the exact same problem in the Texas DAPA case in 2014 on standing, where the four who are called so-called liberal judges thought Texas did not have standing, and the four conservative judges thought Texas did have standing. And so the question that's in my mind is everybody going to flip the script, or will someone stay consistent on this issue about whether states have standing or not to challenge immigration laws?
Thanks so much for reminding us of all of that. Leon Fresco is former Deputy Assistant Attorney General at the Justice Department, where he was head of the Office of Immigration Litigation under the Obama administration. Thanks again.
Thank you.